Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode number 2 of Hanover Happenings. We have got a lot to cover here, so I'm going to dive right in. But before I do, just a reminder that you could subscribe to this podcast, share it with a friend who wants to stay more informed, or send me feedback about it. It's all a work in progress. Now, this is actually take 2 because the first one was way too long. So I'm going to run through a few things a little bit faster, and hopefully that is okay. All right, today we're going to cover the following topics. Number 1, a brief rundown of what we covered in the August Select Board meetings and what's in the queue, such as the rental housing ordinance. Number 2, my administrative report from the August 22nd Select Board meeting, including some updates on upcoming elections, what department heads think are high priority issues over the next 5 years, and staffing shortages and an update on Fall Fest and Home for the Holidays. Number 3, our first employee spotlight, where we will get to know a little bit about Captain Josh Merriam at the Hanover Fire Department. Number 4, we will hear from 3 awesome Hanover High School students why solarizing is so important to them and how we can each learn from each other to be more sustainable. And we will end with a message from the Hanover Police Department about Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Okay, so jumping over to the August 8th Select Board meeting. Remember, I'm not going to go through every agenda item here, just a couple highlights. You can find everything online, agendas, videos, minutes at hanovernh.org or CATV on YouTube. So I do want to make sure to mention that we did appoint Betsy McLean, Deputy Town Clerk. Congratulations, Betsy. Betsy, very familiar with how elections work in Hanover, having previously been the town clerk. If you have been plugged into some of the issues happening in town recently, you'll know that hiring for the town clerk and deputy town clerk is really constrained by the state of New Hampshire. So that is something that we will be talking more about. We also had a bunch of business related to our assessor, and I am going to actually come back to some of that in a minute, and a couple other sort of routine business items on our agenda. We also had a discussion about the rental housing code ordinance, which I will also come back to in a bit, and we authorized a memorandum of understanding between Hanover and Lebanon to make some improvements, which unlock some funding to help us make some improvements to the interconnection between our two water systems and basically formalizing a mutual aid agreement that we already had in place. Okay, so let's zoom over to the August 22nd Select Board meeting. We had a couple different issues that I want to call out there. So one is that we approved a settlement agreement regarding the North Campus land valuation with Dartmouth College. So I think this is a step in the right direction. This is in part related to that property no longer being used for educational purposes. Our assessor also has written up a summary of a decision handed down from the New Hampshire Board of Tax and Land Appeals that affirmed the town's position on a number of complaints and petitions related to our prior reevaluation. So our assessor did write up a summary about that, and that document from the state is available on our website if you want to learn a little bit more. We had a couple routine business items on our agenda on the 22nd, as well as some more discussion about the rental housing code ordinance, which I will come back to again. So we then jumped into administrative reports. The first is about hiring and staffing, and I'm going to be a little bit of a broken record here, and I apologize for that, but we obviously have staffing shortages. And one of the things that I'm going to start doing every month is providing the select board in public just a number of how many staff have left and how many people have been hired. So in July and August, we have had 8 new hires, and we have had 10 people leave. And sometimes people leave not just because they've been offered a better compensation package in another community, but often a number of our employees don't live that close to Hanover because it is so expensive here. So they live further away where it's more affordable, but that makes them susceptible not just to offers of higher compensation, but offers of similar compensation but with much shorter commutes, which can be a cost saver and sometimes help people access things like childcare, which is also difficult to find in this area. In my administrative report, which is available on our website at hanovernh.org, you can also find a sample of some of this. This is the table of organization from our Hanover Parks and Rec Department, color-coded so you can see which positions are vacant. There are a number. And this has a few different impacts. And I'll come back to those in a moment. But the reason why I bring up the staffing shortages again, there's really kind of three different reasons. One is just ensuring that everyone is on the same page with the scope of the challenges that we face from a staffing perspective and some of the compromises that we're going to have to make going forward, which I'll come back to in a second. Number two is the importance of our upcoming kind of two-phase staffing study. The first phase is a more immediate market analysis of what people are being paid in different positions, a more traditional class and comp study. This is going to be used to prepare for new collective bargaining unit negotiations, and we hope those will go smoothly, in part because we will have better data to ensure that we are in line with our goals of paying 75% in the 75th percentile of the market rates for positions in Hanover. So that's the first phase. The second phase, we're going to be zooming out a little bit and thinking a little more creatively and kind of interdisciplinarily about how to recruit and retain people over the next decade. And that is going to be really interesting. And number three, I bring this up because we do have a staffing-related question that I wanted to ask the Select Board. And so that staffing-related question, that's the second item on my report, which is about Fall Fest and Home for the Holidays and event staffing through HPR. Now, Fall Fest takes about 150 to 180 hours of staff hours to put on. That is a lot, and it spans multiple departments, and we just don't really have the staffing to do that right now. And basically what we were asking the Select Board is, you know, my philosophy here is we should try to do fewer events that are better than more events where we stretch ourselves too thin and can't do them well. In addition to that, it contribute to staff burnout and overtime costs and other things. And so what we wanted to do was not have Fall Fest this year and put some of those hours towards Home for the Holidays. The Select Board agreed, and that's what we will be doing. We do hope to bring that back next year. Okay, next. We spent some time in our last couple department head meetings stepping back from sort of the day-to-day craziness and talking a little bit about the future. I like to do that sort of thing often, and it's usually a little more thorough, but at least we did take out time in two department head meetings to think about what do you see in 5 or 10 years? Now, for many people, they saw beaches and lakes and mountains because many of our department heads will be retiring in the next 7 years, most likely, the vast majority of them. And so, although I'd love to hear about people's retirements, we also want to hear about where do you think the departments are going to be, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years? And so we got information from each of the departments kind of in response to that and talked about it. And there were five themes that came out that were the most common responses. I wanted to just touch on those briefly here. Number one, hiring and staffing, not just filling positions, but filling them for changing demands. This includes doing so in a way that improves gender and other demographic representation, work-life balance, and is responsive to things that might be beyond town control, such as climate conditions or the college's plans. Number two, we're calling out succession planning on its own because it was so widely important, with the vast majority, really all but several, of our current department heads who are planning to retire in the next 7 years. Number three, integrating technology more into various department operations that not only helps streamline activities and reduce paper usage, but also allow community members, some of whom need better internet access, to access more services and information online. Number four, we wanted to continue to address facility and building needs from offices to municipal buildings to recreation fields. All of those should be done in sustainably minded ways, and we should continue to do those as part of long-term capital plans. Number five, we should make sure that we're matching services that we provide to changing community and regional needs, which in that implies having a really thorough understanding of what the community does need. Next, some updates about our upcoming elections. And so we did create a new page on the website, hanovernh.org/elections, where you can find the most updated information. I'm just going to touch on a couple deadlines here. So if you are planning in voting to vote in the upcoming primary, you will need to register by September 7th at 2 p.m. So that's September 7th at 2 p.m. If you are voting by absentee ballot, those need to be in by September 12th at 5 p.m. And of course, the primary is Tuesday, September 13th from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Hanover High School. Again, you can find more information at hanovernh.org/elections or email townclerk@hanovernh.org. Next is our rental housing ordinance. So we continued the conversations moving those forward. We've had some really interesting internal conversations where we were putting kind of multi-departments together, including between planning, zoning, codes, health, myself, and our fire department, talking about different ways to approach this. Now, if you're not familiar with this, or even if you are, it's worth restating what we're doing here. What we're doing is looking at ways to improve the safety and habitability of the nearly 1,200 rental units in Hanover. Many, in fact, the majority of those are rented to students. Some of those are not safe. And we would like to put a program in place, and we're exploring the best way to do that at the Select Board's guidance and direction, to better ensure that rental housing is safe. And so this would be creating an inspection and enforcement program, and there are several different statutory frameworks that give us the ability to do that. Now, if you're interested in this because you rent a unit, you're a renter yourself, or you own a unit that you rent out, you may want to check out an FAQ document that our Director of Planning, Zoning, and Codes and myself wrote up, and that is on our website at hanovernh.org/rental-housing. We also created a survey that you can fill out on that same website. So if you are a renter, or if you're another community member and you have an opinion about the ordinance or about rental housing, please head to that URL, hanovernh.org/rental-housing, and check out that survey. Just a few minutes it would take to fill that out. We also on that website have the latest ordinance draft and the upcoming date for our public workshop meeting about this, which is Thursday, September 8th at 1 p.m. in Town Hall. There will also be a Zoom link and recording made available. So encourage people to go check that out. Next is talking about downtown Hanover. I've had some interesting conversations as I continue to sort of pull on the thread of what can the town do to better support our local businesses, especially in the downtown, but not exclusively in the downtown. So I attended an Upper Valley Business Alliance discussion that had some local stakeholders, and it was really interesting to learn from some people, including I love talking to real estate agents and brokers because I get such a good insight into why people are coming in and leaving. One of the things, for example, that we talked about was that it's really hard to find middle housing, and it is hard to find social and kind of cultural connections for young people in the Upper Valley. And so what will often happen is people will move up here for a couple year long rotation or graduate program or something like that. They might move into an apartment in the meantime. When they're coming to the end of that and they're thinking about whether to stay or not, they're looking at housing and they're having a really hard time. They don't want to continue living in an apartment, but they also can't afford a really expensive single family home. And we don't have a lot in the middle. And so I've been meeting with business owners around town and other stakeholders like Vital Communities, Regional Planning Commission, and others, just thinking through different ways that we might support our businesses. And I think I've got some cool things that we're going to be talking about there. Next is our Civics Committee. And as I've been exploring, reaching out to different stakeholders to get their feedback on what we're doing poorly, what we're doing well, how can we engage the community better, as we start to think about putting a committee together to work on that, I've come across some really interesting things. And one of them was from our very own Rob Gerwitt, who you might recognize because he publishes the amazing newsletter Daybreak, which really helped me get up to speed on some things about the Upper Valley before I moved up here, and I find it super informative and helpful. And so Rob actually wrote a case study about a town in Mississippi, Tupelo, Mississippi, and it was about community and economic development. So I'm going to post a link to that article. Rob did give me permission to share that. So I'm going to post a link to that on my report and at hanoverhappenings.com. So you can find that in the show notes to this episode. Also now, publishing this on Substack. So you can go to hanoverhappenings.substack.com and you can find things out there as well. So there's a couple other things that are in my report, but I don't have time to run through them all here because we've got a couple other awesome things to get to. So the next thing that I want to get to is our first employee spotlight. So I'm going to cut over to a conversation of me and Josh. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the first employee spotlight for Hanover Happening. So my name is Alex Torpy. I am the town manager, and I am here with
Josh Merriam.
Josh, tell us what your position and your role is here at the Hanover Fire Department.
Sure. Well, thanks for coming up today. Again, my name is Josh Merriam, and I'm a shift captain here with the fire department. And I work on shift, a 24-hour shift with 48 hours off, followed by another 24-hour shift, and then a few days off after that. So I'm here working with the firefighters and lieutenants, answering emergency calls and all the other stuff that pops up during the day.
What sort of stuff does pop up during the day? What are most of the calls that you all get? What are you kind of seeing these days?
It's pretty diverse here in Hanover. We do run a transporting ambulance here, so all of our firefighters and officers are dual trained or cross trained as healthcare providers. So we're trained at the ALS level. We have multiple paramedics on every shift, and there's about a 60-40% split, with EMS being 60% of our emergency calls and fire being 40% on the other side. As far as the day-to-day goes, we start our shift at 7 a.m. Most people trickle in about 6:30, and we'll have an exchange, an informal exchange of information, sort of catch up with the crew, see what happened in the overnight, anything, any issues the previous day. We have a lot of construction going on in town, so we'll find out sort of any pertinent updates that would impact emergency response, fire hydrants out of service, and equipment issues. Our day is built around being prepared for the emergency response, so making sure that everything is appropriately maintained and that our employees here are training regularly so they can answer that call, and it's sort of seamless.
So what are some of the trainings that you all do? I know there's a lot of exercises in place to make sure everybody's staying up to speed on everything. What's some examples of trainings that happen?
So we try to make every day a training day. So each shift they might hit on a topic that they feel like they need to brush up on, but we cover all technical rescue disciplines along with emergency medical calls and fire-related emergencies. So that can really vary shift to shift. We do put out a standard training for each shift depending upon the season. So for example, we're coming into fall, all of the shifts will conduct an in-service training where they're working on our forestry pumps and everything that goes along with wildland firefighting. We do quarterly drills with, it's actually expanded more than quarterly now, but we do quarterly drills with the Hartford, Vermont Fire Department, the Lebanon, New Hampshire Fire Department. Those are our career fire department counterparts, and we have one coming up next month with confined space, so we'll be traveling to Hartford and we'll be doing a multi-agency drill on confined space technical rescue. In-service training preparing for that will be the shifts working will review the gas metering equipment. They'll review our ventilation fans, our different rope rescue tools that we have to gain patient access. Just kind of a whole bunch of different stuff. It changes.
And when I popped in here a couple of weeks ago, I think you all were meeting with a few of the other departments. I think maybe one was Hartford and one was Lebanon. It sounds like there's a lot of work that happens between the departments. Like, what are those relationships like?
For sure. I feel like they're pretty solid. We do work really closely with each department. So for those that don't know, the daily shift staffing here is five personnel. And you need a whole lot more than five personnel at a serious incident like a structured fire. So we have automatic aid where we're working closely with them. And the only way that's seamless is through repetitive training together and really getting to know one another and sort of that practice before you have the game. So that's what we're focused on.
And now, in addition to the training and in addition to the calls that you all are going on, you also find time, and I know other officers here do as well. But tell us a little bit about some of the kind of continuing education that work that you're doing and why you're interested in it.
Sure. So I'm just finishing up a program at the National Fire Academy called the Managing Officer Program, and it's a multi-year program that's focused on change management, adaptive leadership, and culture and safety within the fire service. That's been a pretty awesome experience. It gives you sort of a national perspective on emerging issues like community risk reduction, which is something that we've spent quite a bit of time as of late talking about.
Right.
Especially as it pertains to rental housing and proposed ordinances and sort of what role the fire department can play in that and ensuring that we have safety within the community.
And so what were some of the topics that have been sort of brought up during those trainings? I know we've now had a few different meetings kind of with internal stakeholders, and I think the insight from the fire side has been really helpful in moving those conversations forward. Like, what was striking to you about what you learned in some of those classes?
Sure. Well, prior to my attendance there, when we took a look at a problem like that within our community, you know, my mindset might have been focused on enforcement. Okay, we're the authority within the community to enforce fire code. We need to go out there and you know, hit the pavement and make sure that everybody's following the life safety codes. After receiving that education, it gives you a broader view, and you start looking at issues, like I said, it's sort of in the title, right? Whole community risk reduction. So identifying the stakeholders, rental housing here in the community, we know that we have a disproportionately high number of college students renting housing downtown, and we're seeing overcrowding, and we want to be part of the change to make the community safe. But you need to realize when you're looking at the problem that there's a lot of different things at play. We have limited housing within the Upper Valley. We know that that's an issue. We have high rental costs, which, you know, drives more people to reside together to keep their daily costs down. There's just a lot of different moving parts. And so having that knowledge and training sort of in the back pocket now, I think you can be a more... you can bring more solutions to the table, or you know, be a better listener and really be a part of a solution that's multi-pronged.
That will be really helpful. I think some of the things we worked out in some of those meetings will enable multiple kind of departments within Hanover to work better together in however this plays out over the next couple of years, right. Which I think we all hope will improve the safety of rental housing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's from the fire department perspective. You know, I've worked here since 2008, and it is a pressing issue that we're seeing on the emergency response side of things. And, you know, as an officer here and somebody that cares about the community, I definitely want to see us make a positive change before we have an issue.
Agreed. And so outside of that, tell us a little bit more about yourself. What else do you care about in your outside of fire life? If there is such a thing. I mean, I think more and more we're trying to find ways to balance work and life, which is particularly difficult in emergency services.
Right.
But tell us a little bit about that and what else you're interested in.
Sure. We're a pretty outdoorsy family, so I do a lot of fly fishing, or fly fish when I can. My family and I are into camping, and we travel to Maine every year to do that, sort of all over New England. Yeah, got a lab at home that likes to go hunting, so do some training there, and yeah.
That's great. What's been, I don't know, is there anything, so you said you've been in Hanover since 2008?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything that stands out over that time period that was, I don't know, kind of a memorable experience here in town or here with the fire department?
There are a lot of memories, for sure, and...
any memories that you'd like to share here on this podcast?
Sure, right. yeah, I think, you know, the I'm at a different point in my career now than I was in 2008. And so you sort of look at the fire service a little bit differently. And what I've noticed is a pretty stark change in how we're viewing the profession itself. And, you know, you mentioned that work, home life balance, and recruitment and retention is becoming a huge issue for the fire service in New Hampshire and across the nation. It's been interesting to see sort of the mentality of the workforce. When I first started working here, if you dealt with something that was particularly tough, you know, we, not to say that you wouldn't really talk about it, but you wouldn't really talk about it.
Hmm.
And now, between the professional firefighters in New Hampshire, the International Association of Firefighters at a national level, and New Hampshire Fire Standards and Training, there's quite a bit out there about the importance of mental health resiliency mm-hmm. and health and wellness. And so we're seeing that change now. In 2008, we had a pretty big lounge TV room in the fire station, couches and a big screen. And that's all been replaced with fitness equipment. And we're focused on that and need to remain focused on that and stay on the forefront of it. I think it's really important.
Well, I'm sure our insurance company loves that change. How do the folks here feel about it? Like, is that an adjustment? Are people interested? Are there other firefighters who are sort of pushing that as well, that they want those things to be kind of in better balance? Is it a mix, or how does that?
Yeah, no, I would say our newer generation of firefighters don't know the fire service any differently. Right?
Hmm.
It's almost part of, it is part of the curriculum now with training.
Right.
Training. So, but Hanover Fire Department and the members that work here as a whole care about one another, and they want to take care of one another, and they know that, I mean, we all know this isn't a forever thing, right? And like,
right.
Someday you're going to retire and want to enjoy your retirement, and you need to take care of one another. So I think we're all on the same page with that for sure. So
that sounds pretty good. Well, I don't know. Is there anything else that you wanted to share, that you want people to know about the Hanover Fire Department or yourself?
We're always open. And we have a great group of people that work here that care about the community. So if you're in the neighborhood and you want to stop by, we're happy to have you. And, you know, we offer up a lot of tours to young children.
Mm.
And that's a big way that we get our message out to people. So, it's a great department and a great group of employees. So.
Well, that's great, and we're happy to have you here and working on all these different issues, and thank you for everything that you do at the fire department
yeah,
here.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate that.
Thanks for coming up.
Yeah. Next, I have a couple other guests that have a really awesome topic to update us on. And instead of me trying to do so, I'm just going to let them introduce themselves and talk a little bit about why these three great Hanover High School students reached out to myself and the town to talk more about solar power. All right, so please introduce yourselves.
So I'm Vidushi Sharma.
I'm Mia Madden.
And I'm Mackenzie Liu.
And you reached out to talk about sustainability. What were you hoping to learn today? So we just met with Yolanda from Sustainable Hanover, Rob from Planning and Zoning, Pete from Public Works, and
Jeannie.
Science teacher at Hanover High School.
Science teacher at Hanover High School. So what were you hoping to learn by reaching out to us about sustainability?
So we are trying to make Hanover High School more sustainable, and one way, a very obvious way, is to solarize Hanover High School. That's a project that Hanover, the town of Hanover, has been working on for a while. So we wanted to figure out kind of how we can start that project at Hanover High School and what the town has done so far and what ways they could support us through that project.
Cool. And what were some takeaways from today? I know we covered a pretty wide range of stuff. Is there anything that sort of stood out that was like helpful in thinking about this?
Well, we learned a lot about what the town has done in the past, and then we also learned about some ways that we can go forward with getting off-site solar, like making an RFP so that mm-hmm. we can try to get some solar, and then also ways that we can start thinking about putting solar at the school.
Those all sound like pretty good options. And so solar in Hanover has obviously been pretty well supported and popular. Are there other things sustainability related that you all have come across that are important to you that could be done in the schools or your homes or in the community?
So Hanover High School has produced something called the Climate Action Plan, which I believe our high school is one of the first, if not the first, public high schools in the country to actually make one. Other schools have them, but they've often just bought, gotten contracts and gotten people to write them for them. And so we have a whole list of ways to make Hanover High School more sustainable. And actually, one thing we were discussing right before we came here was starting our composting program. So we have composting in every single essentially every single classroom at Hanover High, and a group of students who compost twice a week. And thinking about incentives for like riding your bike or carpooling, there's a plethora of ways to make Hanover High School more sustainable. And yeah,
we have that is awesome. And so this is great because we got to share a little bit about what we've done on the town side from a solar perspective. But Yolanda and I, for example, were talking very recently about how we'd like to do more on the food waste side. So I think I'm probably going to be emailing you soon to ask about what you've done at the high school so that we can learn a little bit of that here. That's something that we want to make a higher priority in the coming years.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's pretty cool. And would you say among your classmates, friends, peers, where do environmental issues rank? Are they pretty important to most people? Are most people not thinking about them? Like, what's your reflection on that? Is this something that a lot of people care about?
I think it's something that people care about, but I think it's not something at the top of their mind. But when something comes across like a new plan, like our composting program, people are really receptive to it.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes people, as a matter of convenience, are not always as environmentally forward as they could be. But, I mean, we empty the compost twice a week, and we see people putting food scraps in the compost as opposed to in the trash, and, you know, recycling properly. So there's definitely a lot of people at Hanover High School who are very conscious of their environmental and climate footprint.
That is awesome. Well, I hope that we can learn a little from you all and how we put that together, and hopefully you got to learn a little bit about solar and all the great work that's been done here. And hopefully this is just the beginning of more conversations about all these sorts of issues. So thank you all for reaching out to us and for coming in and talking about solar today.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, and I've got a message here from the Hanover Police Department that I wanted to update you all on. And this is about Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. So in 2021, the Hanover Police Department learned of a young girl in the Hanover community that had been diagnosed with leukemia. This sparked an outreach effort that has since blossomed into an annual campaign for Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. The mission of the campaign is to bring awareness to the prevalence of the diseases and those working to find a cure and the kids who are fighting for their lives. One of the mottos of the national program is no one fights alone, and our officers are enthusiastic about the opportunity to just do a little more that they can do to help kids in our community. So advocates have stated that one of the most effective strategies is to raise awareness at the community level, encourage donations, and volunteerism. And so for Hanover Police Department's part, officers will be wearing a gold ribbon lapel pin, and we'll be provided with information about how people can help if they ask questions. The cruisers will be outfitted with gold ribbon magnets as well. And at the agency level, Hanover Police Department will be hosting a Touch a Truck event where you can come out and meet some of the officers on September 25th. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Ray School on Reservoir Road. HPD employees will also be participating in the blood drive in September as part of the blood donor program at Dartmouth Health. You can also find more information about how to get involved directly if you are interested in doing so. And you can do that online at chadkids.org. And you can donate or learn for more ways that you can get involved. So I wanted to thank the Hanover Police Department for participating in this program and helping raise awareness of this important issue. And again, if you're interested in getting more involved, chadkids.org. So I appreciate you joining me for another episode, the second episode of Hanover Happenings. Hopefully this was interesting and not too long. I'm trying really hard to keep it short without talking like I'm an auctioneer. Now, if you do have any feedback about this, things I should include, things I shouldn't include, please reach out to me at alex.torpy@hanovernh.org. The reason why I'm doing this is so you can be more informed and aware of what is happening and that you can find more ways to get involved. And so please reach out to me if you do have any questions. And again, if you like what you heard here, please consider subscribing to this, sharing it with a friend or another community member, or leaving a review on whatever podcast app that you use. So thanks again for tuning in. And I hope to see some of you around town soon. And if not, I hope to hear from you.